Ask you first of all to tell me about your family background, before the war started. Whereabouts were you living in Germany?
In Munich. So, do you want me to talk? I was born in Munich on the 16th of November 25, in on Maximilianplatz, which is right at the centre of Munich, which gave us very good access to see visual access to see what was happening. My father was an art dealer, and he had a gallery, an art gallery, in the house in which we lived. We lived on the first floor, and the gallery was on the ground floor, street level. I have two sisters. I'm the youngest. One sister is 4 years older than I was, and the first sister is 11 years older than I was. So there was quite a difference in ages. I started school at the Volksschule, which is the education in Germany is rather different, as you know. And then when I was just before I was 11, you are then separated into secondary. If you're good enough, you go to Liceo. And if you're not good enough, you stay to the equivalent, presumably, to our comprehensive here. So I went into the Luisen Lyceum, where I finished 1 year, and then on the 9th of November 38, during the same lesson, we were doing grounds like that, I remember it right today. I was called to the headmistress. And there was one more Jewish girl in the class, and we took it in school.
Were you a very religious family?
No, no. We were a traditional family in the sense that we observed the Jewish holy days, but I would not say we were a religious family. Not in the Orthodox sense, you know. I mean, for the Jewish New Year and for Yom Kippur, we were kept away from school, and for the high hope, altogether, the holiday periods, we were kept away, but other than that, no.
Did you go to synagogue there?
We went to a liberal synagogue, and there was a split in the family, really, because my mother and us children went to the liberal, and my father retained sort of childhood memories of his Orthodox childhood. So he went to a much smaller Orthodox little place which we loathed. We didn't go. We went to a very beautiful synagogue which was burnt down in, during, as all synagogues were, on the 9th of November. There was a little park there now.
Yes. Would you have, the area you were living in, would this have been, you were in an integrated area, were you?
Yes.
Rather than, a Jewish area.
Mm.
Is that how your family was, sort of integrated with Munich society?
I think you have to differentiate between socially and professionally. That's from a very, very smart area, which was... I guess essentially it was the area where all the art galleries are to this day, you know. So it obviously had to be in an area which was integrated. I think socially we had non-Jewish friends, but I think most of our friends were Jewish friends. I had non-Jewish friends at school, in fact, except for one, they were all non-Jewish friends. Because I was in a non-Jewish school, and I felt perfectly natural and happy there.
How about politics? Was your family a political family, would you say?
Not terribly. I think they supported the Weimar Republic for what it was worth. were totally naive and unbelieving about Hitler. And my father's comment was, can't last. You know, uneducated nobody, can't last. And he sat there right up to 38. And you know, their defense mechanisms against reality were absolutely amazing. You know. But I think that might have made a lot of families. You know, we were. He served in the First World War, he had the Iron Cross. You know, he considered himself a German citizen. How come? You know, this can't last. And so I think they were really politically not really aware.
Do you remember the first awareness you had of the Nazis and Hitler?
My first awareness really was the first torture I had. Because we lived in Maximilian, I don't know whether you're familiar with Munich here. We lived in Maximilianplatz, which is at the very center of Munich, which links on the right hand side to a place called the Feldherrnhalle, which is the place where all the big speeches and rallies were held. And links on the left side to a road which is called Brienerstraße, which led to the Bonner House, the Bonner House, which is where Hitler was. So that when the parades happened, they literally walked, and the house was at a corner. And certainly my first memory was, it was night time, and my father and my mother, I only remember one sister and another second one was, and I was quite small. In fact, this may have been before 33, but I'm not sure exactly when it was of these black figured thousands, it seemed. You know, I have a child's memory now, but it seemed to me like an endless, endless wall of torches coming on. Singing these Nazi songs, and I somehow, for the first time, smelt fear. Because it's if my, you know, something happened in the room, like static electricity. I don't remember whether it was talked about. That was my first conscious memory of something that was very, very large and very frightening. And very powerful, because you could hear the footsteps of these, you know, these pointed legs. So that is really my first memory.
When did you become aware of the anti-Semitism, you know, connected with fascism in Germany? Did it affect you at all?
I don't think it affected me personally for quite a long time. I became aware of it because it was talked about. I became aware of it because my father began to have difficulties with his business. I became aware of it because, I don't remember again exactly in what year, but I think it was in 35 that he had his permission to work with Gaul. And we moved. We moved away from Katzenbrunnen's Platz to, you know, to Karlstrasse, which is, you know, much less, which is just an ordinary street. Maximilian's Platz was not, it was very much part of the centre of the town. So I knew, but again, you see, in retrospect, I don't know, I was a very aware child. I got on with living, and,
before you moved, you know, up until 1935, were there many more of those torchlight processions?
Yes, they happened frequently. I'll tell you one very fun memory I have. I don't know whether that's relevant. Very near to where we live, there are the two major museums, the Pinakothek and the Kinderthek. And there is a vast sort of concord between them. And I used to play there with my girlfriends. And at the one end of the strong quarter is the brown house, the house where Hitler and his people were. And my friend and I, we were going behind the Pinakothek one day, where there was a garden and woods. And suddenly a flasher appeared. And he ran after us, and we were absolutely terrified. And we ran and ran and ran, and we were so scared that I ran into a pillar outside the barn house, and I hit my head open. And there was one of the SR guards who picked me up. And he was so nice. And he made it better, and he put a plaster on, and he was really very kind. And I remember thinking what he would have done if he had known that I was Jewish. So I clearly, at some level, was aware that I had become a pariah.
And your father was having problems with the art dealing, was he? And
well, he never stopped. He had to give up the gallery, and we moved to Karlstrasse. But he must have still have had. He dealt mainly in old masters. Because I remember that when he was taken to Dachau on the 9th of November, when they took him, they also took all the paintings. Which we subsequently learned ended up in the Pinakothek, in those various, museums or whatever. So he must have had been allowed to or taken, but there were still paintings. I know there were still paintings in Karlstrasse, but we don't look at no more gallery. And I don't think he had, I can't tell you, you see, I don't remember, and I probably didn't know whether he had permission to. In fact, we found the letter with holding and withdrawing the permission to work only when he came to me. They didn't talk, my parents. They're not a communicative family at all.
Did your sort of standard of life deteriorate at this time? You know, when you moved in 1935?
Yes. It became much simpler. And, I mean, it had been a fairly affluent, fairly upper class flat in Maximilian's Platzinch. It was okay, but it was just a flat. It was really, you know. And then we moved again. Then we moved to Schwabing. Now there is something there, but I'm not sure that I have the evidence right. Because when we were in Karlstrasse, at the bottom there was a pharmacy. And that was owned by a man who was not only a member of the party, but a very, very anti-Semitic one. And he had something to do with our moving, but I can't tell you what. But I know that, you know, they were frightened of him, and they would talk about him, and he was a very unpleasant and nasty man. But I don't know what he actually did.
How about, you know, I know it's very difficult because you were a young child and, you know, concerned with your own sort of affairs, but have you any idea how your parents, you know, apart from the material effects, how they were affected otherwise? Sort of, you know, your mother, for instance, was she?
I think they started at that stage to worry, but they started in a non-constructive way. They worried about my sister, my older sister, who's 11 years older than I. She got married on the 29th of September, the day the children came. I mean, that was planned long before we spoke about signature. But they had procured for her and her husband, in those days you could still get permission to emigrate to Palestine, providing you had what's called a capitalist visa, for which you had to have £1,000 capital. They had made sure that she had that, and she and her new husband left on the night of the 29th of September. so by then they had broken up to that extent. But I think they didn't really know what to do, where to go. You know, they were, they had no language. They were by then old, in their late 50s. Yes. I think the thought of starting again may have been just too much for them, but certainly I don't remember any active or any action being taken until after my father went to concentration camp. Mm-hmm.
And would you have had an extended family? You know, did you have grandparents and aunts?
Oh, yes. I had grandparents. My grandfather. Yeah, I had two lots of grandparents. One lot in Munich. We were only born. And we had to go there after duty. And one lot in Berlin. We were much more fun.
Yes. Had your family lived a long time in Germany?
My mother comes from Strasbourg. And she was born in 1896. Then it was French German. So she grew up with dual nationalities, because she was basically German and became French. She used to tell us that when they were in school, they had to speak French one day and German the next day. And if they were caught speaking French on the German day, they would get into trouble and vice versa. Her father was a tax inspector. Her maiden name was Schweich. And they were a very German family. Well established. There was somebody at the back who had been the mayor of a little village called Schweich. We had a postcard somewhere at the railway station called Schweich. So she comes from a very German background. He married, her mother died very, very young, he remarried. He was wounded in the First World War, and he married the woman who nursed him, who became my step-grandmother, who was quite a lot younger than me. Amina, they called her mum and Amina. He was her mum, and she was Amina. We liked them, they were fun. My father's family comes from Poland. And my father came to Germany as a young boy, about 13 years old. And I get really short, so I'm
afraid. Yes, you were saying about the torchlight processions. Did you see any of the rallies? You know, I understand Munich was a place for big rallies as well.
Well, we couldn't really help seeing the ones that were held at the Feldherrnhalle. Yes, we did see. But many of them, of course, were held in the beer cellars. We didn't go to see a rally, but you couldn't help seeing them where we lived.
Because Munich would really be the centre, wouldn't it, of Nazism? Mm. Were they frightening occasions?
They were very frightening, because I think even then there is something unbelievably terrifying about mass hysteria, and about how easy it is to create mass hysteria. But really, it needs something. It struck me, which is going to do this, even, you know, with Princess Di, which was a positive hysteria, if you like, but which creates its own momentum, which becomes unstoppable. And that's really what happened. It became unstoppable. It's like an avalanche, which has no logic, has no reason, it's sheer emotion. An adulation on whose, he had become the big saviour.
Did you see Hitler yourself?
Yes.
What was he like? What do you remember about him?
A little man. Looked like Charlie Chaplin. I mean, he looked very unimpressive, but at the same time, he carried this aura of power. You see, he's always in uniform, either brown shirted or black shirted, but usually brown. Very rarely wore black. I mean, usually, I don't know whether he identified him with the SR, but he did with the SS. But in fact, thinking back, I didn't have any memory of him in black. It was always in brown uniform. And he was always down in his car.
How about the other Nazis? Did you see them?
Yeah. What do you mean, the...
The sort of leaders?
I mean, you would see Goering and Goebbels because you would recognize them in the same way in the cars at rallies.
You've probably seen a lot of films, haven't you, of this time? Do the films match up with your memory of the rallies and the torchlight processions and your glimpses of the top Nazis?
Yes, they do, actually. Depends on the films. I mean, the documentaries. It's also difficult now to in a way, separate experienced memory from, you know, superimposed imagery. But certainly, yes, I think they were.
And how obvious was Hitler's voice and Goebbels, their voices?
Terrible voice. I mean, the voice carried the hysteria. I mean, it went up cadence above cadence. It was a dreadful voice. Shrieking, shouting, obsessive.
And did you
see voice? And, you know, if you saw him out of context, you would say this man was...
And how about the radio? You know, was Hitler often on the radio?
Yes, very often. And in those days, radios, of course, were still very exciting gadgets. And my father would sit there and tune and make dreadful noises trying to get the right stations to pick up. And we would find Hitler shrieking in the radio. Yes, he spoke a lot on the radio.
And would there have been many signs on the street? You know, did they hang the flags? And was the swastika much in evidence?
Yes. It was.
So as you were growing up through the Hitler years, were you feeling less secure, would you say, with these different moves, the two moves you had? Did it affect you very much?
I don't know what to say to that, because it obviously did, yes. I moved house 3 times. I saw what was happening around me. I smelt the fear. And yet, I carried on, as it were, as normal. I had a few weird experiences. One that sticks out, but which was probably not even associated with antisemitism. It may have been, I don't know. I was in my first year at the Lyceum, which is a secondary school, and we had been asked to write about an essay about what we had done in the Christmas holidays. And during Christmas holidays, I had been taken to a theatre for the first time. And that was wonderful, absolutely wonderful. It's amazing to this day, I'm grateful to you. And I wrote an essay about the bread. When it came to marking, Mr. Sass, that Sass he was called, stood up and he tore it in half. And he said, you obviously did not do this on your own. So you know. And that was a really filthy thing to do. It was really mean. Because I had them on my own. That was very punitive, but I don't know whether it was because I was Jewish, or whether he didn't like me, or I can't tell you.
Were there any other incidents of that sort?
There were kids, yes. Slowly you began to feel more marginalised. And, you know, you asked me earlier on about friendships, and I said that all my friends were Jewish, were Gentile. I think, thinking back now, as time progressed, fewer and fewer, you know. I mean, my best girlfriend, Regina, was an English girl, and we were very close. And then suddenly she wasn't allowed to see me anymore. And you feel there is this dichotomy when you're young, is it me? You know, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with what I am? Because there is also this lack of comprehension that you don't actually, so I'm Jewish, so what? What makes me so different, you know? And I think this has actually played a big part in my life, you know, this not understanding what and what is antisemitism really about, because it is so, so prevalent. What is it about us? Anybody else's?
Yes. Did it affect your feeling of being Jewish, do you think? The fact that, I mean, were you aware of the very virulent propaganda, anti-Semitic propaganda, was it Der Stürmer and other journals?
We used to read Der Stürmer on the way home from school, because on the way home, Der Stürmer had these, it was in glass cases on the walls, you know, you could buy it obviously, but in case you should forget to buy your copy, there were, you know, in the various streets there, it was displayed. And my Jewish girlfriend and I, we would stand in front of these caricatures, you know, with the great big footnotes, dreadful figures. What did we think? I don't know what we thought. I really can't tell you. And what goes on in the psyche of a 9-year-old that I can't even remember. You know, it was somehow, it was all so alien. The caricatures were alien because I didn't feel identified with them. And I felt alien because they were obviously meant for us. And, you know, and in a way, we put it somehow, you know. It was very confused. But it certainly became more and more of it.
You were saying earlier about Kristallnacht. Could I ask you about that now? Yeah. Your memory of that day and what happened?
Well, it started like an ordinary day. I went to school, and as I told you, in the middle of the singing lesson, we were called out. And the headmistress, who was actually a rather nice woman, she was very embarrassed, and we didn't know what we'd done wrong. And she said, well, it's nothing you've done, you're just Jewish. I'm sorry, but you have to go. So, on the way home, we looked at the Stürmer. And then we had to cross. The school was in a street where there weren't many shops. It was a residential street in the school. And when we got to a busier street, we saw the shops that we smashed up and the glass and, you know, the havoc that was going on. When I got home, my father wasn't there. And my mother was distraught, and there was chaos in the house, everybody was worried to death. And apparently, my father had been warned by a non-Jewish friend, and he was with this non-Jewish friend. And then at night, he came back to collect some food, and they had to be watching for me. At, I don't know, 3 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock, maybe all asleep. There was this famous knock on the door, and there were 3 guys, pulling up.